Welcome to the South Cars Outreach Program. Join our training session in progress.
Well, good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and it's my pleasure to welcome you to the Outreach Program tonight, sponsored by the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This program has been established to help those wishing to learn more about our hobby and further assist those wishing to upgrade licensed status. This will be an in-depth course pertaining to what one should know when studying for an extra class license. This course will be conducted with two sessions weekly, which will be at 7 p.m. 2300 Zulu each Tuesday and at 7 p.m. 2300 Zulu each Sunday evening. For those that are already licensed and wish either a refresher course or would just like to listen, please connect to our SCARS server at either Echolink node number 96140 or IRLP node 9614. For those who are interested, please contact Mike KD0CDQ via email at VOIP@VOIPAnet.southcars.com to enroll in the class and be given directions as to the study material required and the manner you will be connecting into the course. Let me pause for just a moment. The material being presented is formulated from data obtained from the ARRL and is simply being forwarded in a presentation format by SCARS. Should anyone take issue to some of the technical statements made and in keeping with not interrupting the class in session, please convey your comments or suggestions to the outreach program once again at VOIP@VOIPAnet.southcars.com. It should be mentioned that this course covers only the requirements pertaining to the United States Part 97 rules and does not include other requirements that may be found in foreign countries. Should any other country other than the United States wish to have their own licensing sessions on this server, please drop us an email at, once again, VOIP@VOIPAnet.southcars.com. The session this evening will be recorded and posted on our website at www.voip.southcars.com. Let me pause just a moment again. Please note, for all of our class members and instructors, it's extremely important that we all stay on the same page during these classes. The only question pool and copy thereof that should be used when participating in this class should be the one found posted on our website. Publications from other sources may or may not be current and should not be used during our sessions. Now, do we have any emergency or out-of-the-ordinary business that needs to be handled before we start this evening's program? Well, that's always great news. Once again, I want to welcome you to our Outreach Extra Course, Class 7, I believe, this evening. Our instructors include KD0CDQ, a Mike from Olathe, Kansas, and NC5R, Rick, who I believe is in Illinois at this point. Welcome, gentlemen, and I understand, Rick, you are the one to begin, so I'm going to turn it over to you. Thank you, Mike, Rick, and South Cars for allowing me to read the preamble this evening. So NC5IR, it's all yours.
Well, thank you, Kathy. It's great to hear your voice again. This takes me back a few years. I haven't done much with South Cars or much with ham radio here lately. I had a rash of things go wrong with my radio, so I've been kind of off the air quite a bit. Still have one in the car, but the car and the motorhome is in Illinois, and I'm in Friendswood, Texas. Flew home for a short visit, and I'm currently at my grandson's birthday party. So there's a lot of noise right outside the bedroom door, but they let me excuse myself to participate with this. So hopefully I'll get the hang of all this the button pushing. Let me let it drop before I go to my first question. All right, this is NC5IR, and my first question is from the E6 section, and it'll be E6 Charlie04 question. What is the primary advantage of tri-state logic? The correct answer is B, ability to connect many device outputs to a common bus. In other words, in digital electronics, three-state, tri-state, or three-state logic allows an input port to assume a high impedance state of addition to the 0 and 1 logic levels, effectively removing the output from the circuit. This allows multiple circuits to share the same output line or lines, such as bus, as a bus which cannot listen to more than one device at a time. This is the explanation. If anyone has a question or wants clarification, please chime in now. All right, well, I heard nothing, so let's continue on. My second question is going to be Echo 6, Charlie 08. Referring to the figure E6-5 of the circuits and the diagrams and so forth, what is the schematic symbol for a NAND gate, N-A-N-D gate? The correct answer is B, and that would be number 2. So, Gordon gave me a little clue as to how you can remember this. Think about a NAND gate this way. It has a straight vertical back next to its input pins and has a nose like Rudolph but not red. So if any way that you can remember these things that works is a way to do it. So these would be a little hint. It's got a vertical, straight vertical back next to the pins in the rear and a nose like Rudolph but not red. So those are my first two questions, and Mike has the next one. Let's go to Mike, NC5IR.
Okay, on the question Rick just presented, are there any questions on that question? Please go now if you have any inquiries. Okay, not hearing anything. I would suggest that you get your diagrams in front of you. It's actually two sheets, as I recall. There's two sheets, and they're really good. I would hang on to those sheets that come out from ARRL. There's so much information on them, and that question that Rick just did pertains to that. And the first question I have is also on that diagram. So I'm going to be starting with Echo 6, Charlie 10. And that one, you'll be looking at one of the diagrams here, one of the figures. So if you have them in front of you, it'll help. Okay, my question again, Echo 6, Charlie 10, is in figure Echo 6-5, that's the lower left diagram, in figure Echo 6-5, what is the schematic symbol for a NOR gate, N-O-R gate? And again, we get the typical four selections, which will not necessarily be in that order on your test, but the answers will be there, the same answers. Okay, the answer on that is Delta D, which is the number 4 in the diagram. And I didn't think of Rudolph. When I read that, I thought that was cute. This NOR gate, N-O-R, is a logic gate in an elementary building block of a digital circuit. Most logic gates have two inputs. You'll see two lines going in and one line coming out. At any given moment, every terminal is in one of the two binary conditions, low, which is considered 0, or high, which is 1. Remember, O's and 1's. They present the different voltage levels. The logic state of a terminal can and generally does change often as the circuit processes data. In most logic gates, the low status is approximately 0 volts, while the high state is approximately 5 volts positive. There are 7 basic logic gates, which you should get to know. I won't read them because you'll see what they are. But this NOR gate that I am speaking of is a combination OR gate followed by an inverter. Its input is true. Whenever they say the word true, that's the 1. When they say the word false, that's a 0. You got to put that in your mind. 1 is true, false is 0. Otherwise, the output is a false, which would then be a 0. If you remember that, true, 1, false, 0. And it also has a nose on it. The A-N-D and the N-A-N-D, it looks like a knot, a little different. So the O-R and the N-O-R has a nose on it, and the A-N-D, N-A-N-D, kind of looks like a knot to me.
It's timed out right at the end, Mike. Go ahead, sir.
Yes, I saw that in the text box. Are there any questions about these diagram gate pictures? Please bring the question up now if you wish. Okay, no questions about these funny pictures right out of Walt Disney. So we're going to send it on back to Rick. Rick, take it away down there in Texas. My grandchildren are down there, too. That's where they all moved to, all but two. Back to you, Rick.
Well, thank you, Mike. All of my grandchildren are about 30 feet away on the other side of the wall. So my next question comes from Echo 6 Delta 01. How many turns will be required to produce a 5 microhenry inductor using a powdered iron toroidal core that has an inductance index, AL, value of 40 microhenries per 100 turns? I read this question to my wife and she said, what? So you guys, their students get to learn this wonderful stuff. All right. So the correct answer is A, 35 turns. A clue and formula that might help on this is on this one, please refer to the study guide. You will find the formula to be 100 times the square root of 5 over 40 or 35 turns. So a little bit of math in that one, but it's not too difficult. Are there any questions on this one?
Six Victor, and welcome back to Texas, sir.
Thank you, Gordon. It's always great to be back home, short time though it may be. It's just nice to be here, even though it's so hot and humid. Anything else, Gordon?
Yeah, I wanted to throw a little tidbit in here. You know, in the question it refers to an inductance index, AL, value of 40. And this in itself can be a little confusing, but the AL is nothing more than the informational device in the creation of the index. So the AL is not part of the equation at all. The value that you're talking about on the inductance index, AL, value of 40, is the one that you need to use. And just don't worry about the AL. And I guess this is my opportunity to say, Rick, don't worry about the alpha designators on the question answers either, because these jabokes are going to turn them around on us. Go ahead, sir, KY6V, and thank you.
All right. That's good to know. I was doing that as much for my information as anyone else's. So, all right, I'll try to just give the correct answer. All right, well, the next question will be from Mike. Take it away, Mike.
Okay, here we go. The next question is Echo 6 Delta 02. And your wife may think those questions are pretty crazy. Well, I think these answers on the one that I'm doing is crazy answer. It's kind of heavy. Okay, on Echo 6 Delta 02, the question is, what is the equivalent circuit of a quartz crystal? Simple. But the answers are kind of multiple. I'm just going to read the right answer, which is alpha in this case, but it will not always be alpha. The correct answer is, what is the equivalent circuit of a quartz crystal? It's emotional capacitance, motional inductance, and loss resistance in series, all in parallel with a shunt capacitor representing electrode and stray capacitance. Oh, yeah, yay. What an answer, huh? Well, basically, what they're saying to us is a crystal oscillator is an electronic oscillator circuit that uses a mechanical resonance of a vibrating crystal of a piezoelectric material, that's a good word, to create an electrical signal with a precise frequency. So it's vibrating at a precise frequency. This frequency is commonly used to keep track of time, as in, of course, for this watch, okay? To provide stability, the clock signal for digital integrated circuit, and to stabilize frequency for radio transmitters, in our case, and receivers. The most common type of piezoelectric resonator used is the quartz crystal. So oscillator circuits incorporating them become known as crystal ice oscillators, crystal oscillators. And I would refer you to the publication study guide, which includes a circuit diagram of the components involved. Also, I found a nice website. I was going to read it, but it's kind of long, and Gordon is right. So I'll give you this website that tells you about quartz crystals, tells you stuff you never knew about them. It's just, if you want to get a pencil handy, I'll let it drop and come back, and then we'll ask for any questions. This website that tells you a lot about crystals is bestcrystals.com, and I would go from there. It tells you quite a bit about crystals, which, we don't know about the manufacturer, but it tells you a bit about what they are. Are there any questions about that answer that we just gave? Please go now. Okay, we're going to jump back to Rick down there in Texas. My son tells me it's a dry heat down there, but I don't know. I get soaking wet when I'm down there, just like in Kansas, but it's dry heat, he says. Okay, Rick, you're up.
All right, thank you, Mike. Well, in some parts of Texas, it may be a dry heat, but when you're here on the coast between Houston and Galveston, like I am, there ain't nothing dry about it. You open the front door from your air-conditioned house, and it hits you like a damp furnace. I tell you, it's wet. You sweat all the time. So some parts might be dry, but it's not here. All right, well, my next question is Echo 6 Delta 05. What is one reason for using ferrite cores rather than powdered iron in an inductor? The correct answer is ferrite toroids generally require fewer turns to produce a given inductance value. If you have the questions, that was number C. Just for general information, within the past 5 years, manufacturers have introduced a new type of ferrite material that has increased the maximum flux density level from a previous high of 5,000 G to 5,800 G at 25 degrees Celsius, and from 3,800 G to 4,800 G at 100 degrees Celsius. The material is often referred to as a high B sat material. Now, Gordon, please feel free to elaborate even further on that. Or any other questions, please come now. All right, hearing no questions or comments on that, I'll pass it over to Mike with his next question.
Very good. I'm going to be looking at Echo 6 Delta 09. What devices are commonly used as VHF and UHF parasitic suppressors at the input and output terminals of a transistor HF amplifier? It's a lot of questions, but it's a good thing to know, just to know it yourself. The answer is a ferret bead. Now, on my mobile rig in my car, VHF, UHF, it's a pre-owned rig, and I was having trouble that it was hanging up. See, the devices. This device is commonly used in VHF-UHF parasitic suppressor at the input and output terminals of a transistor HF amplifier, it says. But this ferret bead, which is a very small core with a hole design, it slips over a wire. It kind of clips on like a... It looks like a reinforcer that you'd put in a wall when you're going to put a screw into a soft wall and you have a reinforcement. Same thing. It clips around the wire. And through the miracle of electronics, it suppresses parasitic noise. My radio was locking. So it's good if you have trouble with any kind of a rig that seems to be locking on itself, maybe a chance that a ferret bead will keep that from doing that. Is there any questions about that question about the ferret beads? Over. Okay, I'm kicking it back to Rick. Rick, you got the ball as the car pulls in my driveway. Good deal, because you've got two questions and I got a chance to dash away. Go ahead, Rick.
All right, Mike. Yeah, find out who's coming for a visit and get rid of them quick. All right, my next question will be Echo 6 Delta 12. What is the definition of saturation in a, Mike pronounced it ferrite, and since he's away, I'll say it ferrite, core inductor? The correct answer is the ability of the inductor's core to store magnetic energy has been exceeded. So what that means is, seen in some magnetic materials, saturation is the state reached when an increase in applied external magnetic field cannot increase the magnetization of the material any further. So the total magnetic flux density more or less levels off. That was answer C to Echo 6 D12. Any questions on that one? All right, hearing no questions. What I've noticed is several questions in tonight's session refer to the different materials. That was just something that was of interest to me, and so that's one of the reasons why we're on that theme. All right, next question. Echo 6, Delta 14. Which type of slug material decreases inductance when inserted into a coil? Which type of slug material decreases inductance when inserted into a coil? The correct answer is brass. Between ceramic, brass, ferrite, and powdered iron, the correct answer is brass, quite different than all the others. A changing magnetic field induces a current in conductive materials. This current causes a reverse magnetic field that repels the applied changing magnetic field. This is why a non-ferrous metal rod inserted in a core, a coil, reduces the inductance. It also increases power loss as heat in the rod. So the difference in that material both increases power loss and let's see, I don't want to read the whole thing again. A changing magnetic field induces a current in the conductive material, and this causes a reverse magnetic field that repels the applied changing magnetic field. This is why a non-ferrous metal rod inserted into a coil reduces the inductance. It also increases power loss as heat in the rod. Any questions on that one? All right, Mike, I hope you're back on the air. The next question is yours. This is MC5IR.
I am back. This is KD0CDQ. A fellow ham came with his dad to pick up the communication vehicle that's out here, the one that I was operating from today. That question that Rick just covered, Gordon is into the electronic side, which is very deep to me. I like things that are mechanical. So when we talk about a coil or putting a piece of brass inside and it's changing magnetic fields, I like that. That's the kind of questions that mean something to me. I must be goofy. But it makes me want to play with a coil and put a brass rod in it and see what the magnetic field is. It makes me want to look into that. That's weird stuff, right? For me, I'm weird. Okay, we're going to have three questions in a row. Let's see if I can keep them apart. I'm going to let it drop, and I'll start with the first one. There goes the vehicle driving away. I'm going to send Gordon pictures of this vehicle. It's really pretty. The first question is Delta 6 Echo 06. It's in the text box. Echo 6, Echo 06. What characteristics of the MMIC makes it a popular choice for VHF through microwave circuits? And that MMIC is monolithic microwave integrated circuit. Okay, the answer on this one, well, I'm not going to give you the letter. It's D, though, in this case. It's to control the gain, lower noise figure, and constant input and output impedance over a specific frequency range. So the characteristics of an MMIC makes it a popular choice of VHF through microwave circuits. And the answer is D in this case, but again, it may not always be D. A monolithic microwave integrated circuit, or an MMIC, it's pronounced MIMIC in the trade, is a type of integrated circuit an IC, device that operates at microwave frequencies, which is around 300 megahertz to 300 gigahertz, I read. These devices typically perform functions such as microwave mixing, power amplification, low noise amplification, and high frequency switching. Input and output on MMIC devices are frequently matched to a characteristic impedance of 50 ohms. Remember, we do a lot with 50 ohms with our antennas. This makes them easier to use, and cascading an MMIC does not then require an external matching network. Additionally, most microwave testing equipment is designed to operate a 50 ohms environment. And Gordon may correct me on this, but I think all of our coax, we try to work with 50 ohms, so everything is matching. Okay, is there any questions on that one? Letting it drop. Okay, I'm back with Echo 6 Foxtrot 04. Echo 6 Foxtrot 04. What is a photovoltaic effect? What is the photovoltaic effect? That's a word for you. The answer is the conversion of light to electrical energy. This is so important. So photoelectric is the conversion of light to electrical energy. Photoelectric effect refers to the emission or ejection of electrons from a surface of a metal. Energy contained in the incident light is absorbed by electrons within the metal, giving the electron sufficient energy to be kicked out of, that is emitted from, the surface of the material. Using the classical Maxwell wave theory of light, the more intense the incident light, the greater the energy with which the electrons should be ejected from the metal. That is, the average energy carried by an injected, a photoelectric electron, should increase the intensity of incident light. Think of our solar panels. It's exactly what the solar panels are doing. They don't have to be metal, though, but there's some metal in the chemistry of it. So our solar panels is actually what a photovoltaic effect is, converting light to electrical energy. Cool, whoever found that, huh? Well, very good. Any questions about that question and answer? Go ahead now.
Six, Victor.
Go ahead, Gordon. Throw it at us, please.
Oh, I just thought I would impart a little humor. I, for one, would wish that they would increase the intensity of the light at the end of the tunnel. It's sometimes very difficult to find. KY6V. Thanks, Mike.
Yeah, that's what I like about those cowboy movies when a train goes through a tunnel and they're fighting on the roof and they come out in a little light on the other end and there's another world out there. That's pretty cool. What I really like solar panels. I think it's amazing what they do, and I think it's amazing with the solar cars. All that stuff I think is really amazing. Quite a step. Okay, the next question.
Well, everybody stand by here. I don't see where Mike has timed out, yet he stopped very abruptly, so he may have a connection problem, but he's still connected. So give him a second or two, or I'll pick up the question for him. This is KY6V.
Thank you, Gordon. I'm here. I'm just tripping over that word in Foxtrot 08. Why are optoisolators often used in conjunction with solid-state circuits when switching 120 volts? The answer in this case is C, but not always going to be. Optoisolators provide a very high degree of electrical insulation between a control circuit and the circuit being switched. Okay, that's the answer to the question. What are they talking about? In electronics, an opto-oscillator, usually called an optocoupler or a photocoupler or an optical isolator, is a component that transfers electrical signals between two isolated circuits by using light. That's the word optio, optic. Opto-oscillators prevent high voltage from affecting the system receiving the signal. Commercially valuable opto-isolators withstand input to output voltage up to 10 kilovolts and voltage transients, which speeds up to 10 kilovolts. A common type of opto-isolator consists of an LED and a photo transistor in the same optic package. Other types of source sensors could be LEDs with photo iodes. In other words, we're talking about LEDs here when they're talking about these optics. Remember the word optic? Remember the word LED? And I think that'll join it together for you and make it easier. There's a lot of tricky words that make my tongue slip around here. Okay, I think I've done my three questions here in a row. Are there any questions regarding any of these three or any questions thus far tonight? Over.
Okay, well, it's quiet. Six victory again.
Okay, there is a sort of a phenomenon going on lately with, I noticed that our students are probably looking at our recordings because they're not always here on these evenings in particular. It's the same thing happening in different events, like charity events and such. There's been a big reduction this year in participation. We think it's people are kind of tight with money and stuff is kind of tight with this election year. People aren't getting out. But I noticed that a lot of our students have not been aboard during the class, but hopefully they're looking at the recordings and getting this help, because this is vital for them to get their extra license. Okay, now I'm going to give you this, I'm going to add this in here about the QRZ. This is a good time to start. Now, Gordon sent us an email today, and George alerted me to that it was in the email. It was N070. That if you go to www.qrz.com, you're familiar with that, I hope, /ham test, one word, ham test, /. If you go in there, you can start taking these exams, and these exams are very good. They switch the answers, the alphanumeric changes, it doesn't go ABCD, it switches around on you. Each time you take the test and do the same question, the answer is in a different location. That's amazing how they can do that. They have a little mouse in there doing that. So it keeps us on our toes. So when we do take the written test, which is hard copy usually, that we're not looking for the particular numeric answer. And I know Kathy brings it up all the time, not to be hypnotized by the ABCDs. So it's a good time to start studying now. Go over and over those questions until they start to sink into your brain. Is there any questions about any of the, something about a wireless mouse? Okay. Are there any questions about anything we've covered this evening? Over. It's a funny thing, he talks about a wireless mouse in that communication vehicle that we have. It's a converted canteen, so it's got a sink and a microwave and everything in there. Down in the sink, there was a mouse in there. No, it was a wireless mouse, okay? It was a mouse from a computer. It was down in the sink. I think somebody put the mouse in there as a joke, but it's not a real mouse. So, wireless mouses can do a lot of things. Not only work your computer, they can make a guy's eyes get big when you look at a sink and there's a mouse in there. Okay, now with these diagrams, get to know these diagrams. We're going to be covering them again in other sessions. These diagrams will come into effect. They're maybe not the easiest way to learn because they're flat, but when you look at the diagrams that are showing different patterns of antennas, it gives us a visual, and we all kind of need a visual, even though these pieces of paper are flat. Are there any questions about the figures that we'll be using with these exams? Okay, so when we come back on Tuesday evening, we're going to be doing some more of those figures, as I recall. Yeah. There's a couple of questions in there at least that are going to be in the figures on those sheets. So get to know them. Get comfortable with them. They're not difficult to understand. When you look at a symbol that's been created by an electrical engineer or any kind of an engineer, there's some sense to the figure that they made. So if you look at it long enough, you'll look at the nonsense and make sense of it, hopefully, to know why they use particular symbols. They do make sense if we look at them long enough. I guess our mind gets warped. Are there any questions about anything we've covered this evening? Please go ahead now. Okay, this is KD0CDQ. I know that Gordon and Kathy are very busy people. I can tell that they're busy people because they do so much. If you get a person that's busy, you're going to find them their fingers into a lot of things. Just like I see that Rick is from Illinois, but he's down in Texas visiting his grandchildren, and he's got a birthday party going on the other side of the wall. We get into things. We get busy. So sometimes we maybe slop up a little bit here and there because we're not on only one track. But with this exam, don't feel that you have to, in a hurry, run on down to the test shop and take this exam. Get yourself ready, get comfortable with it, and set a date and go down and do it. Yes, set a date. Don't just say, I'm going to. Set a date, but don't press yourself. Make sure that you're comfortable with sitting for the exam and the environment that you're going to be in, letting it drop. The reason I'm reviewing this is we have time tonight, that I would again recommend that you go to the test site where you're going to take the exam, not necessarily the first time to take the test, but go in there on a test day and look at the room, look at the setup, look what's going on, so it's comfortable to you. So when you come back in to do your test, you're not distracted by the irregularities, you know, of the people in the room or the room itself or the setting or getting to it. Get yourself comfortable with the setting of where the test is. So I would recommend that you go just to check it out. Even if the place is closed, checking out the outside of the building is a good idea. Getting in the parking lot and all of that so you're comfortable. Those kind of little distractors can throw us on an exam because something's strange. Maybe there's somebody in a room that looks strange and they kind of knock you off. That can happen. Honestly, you've been in a place and seen some strange folk and they throw you off a little bit. So when you're going to take a test, sometimes there's some strange folk in there. Are there any questions, any observations, Rick or Gordon or Kathy? Anybody want to make any observations? I'm going to include you there, George, too. I know that you're still hanging in there. Are there any comments anybody wants to make about this before we turn off the recordings? Over.
Yeah, Six Vector, Mike.
Yes, Gordon. Please put your beautiful voice in there and give us something to contemplate.
Compensate, you say. Thank you, sir. KY6V here. Couple of things when they start into this practice exam, you know. We're over halfway now in the class, which means that they should have about 350-plus questions under their belt related to the 712 total that is in the question pool. Now, when you start taking the exams at this level, you're going to probably have some questions that we'll be covering a little further down the line, or you have not looked at and examined yet. Don't let that throw you. You know, just take a look at what you've got there, and you'll remember it when you get to that point. I think the QRZ, as I recall, sort of forces you to put the right answer in before you can continue on, so you'll fiddle around and get the right answer in there, and then they'll move you on, and then the next time you have to face it, you'll know what the answer is type thing. Let me buy a nickel. The other comment I wanted to make about the students coming and going as far as the class is concerned, my only comment on that is the recording is very beneficial for them to re-review that's on the website, but it's very important that they have gone through the class assignments as total questions to review. If they're halfway through the course, relying only on the podcast that's posted, they're not going to get there from here. Go ahead, Mike. Let me know when you're ready, and I'll push the buttons on these recorders. KY6V, over.
This is KD0CDQ. Gordon shook my mind and reminded me of something. When you're on QRZ.com doing those exams, there's a box that you check that tells you either you can go ahead and take the whole test and then see the score, or you can check a box, as I remember, and it does one question. It will not go beyond that question until you check the right box. I kind of like that choice. When you take your choice of the answer, it doesn't move. It just looks at you. Then you know you picked the wrong one. So then look for the proper answer, click the right answer, and then it'll give you the result. I like that because it stops you from impressing in your mind the wrong answer. Remember, the mind puts the questions and answers together. We don't even realize it. You click on the wrong one, it doesn't move. It freezes. So you don't imprint the wrong answer in your brain. I like that. So I think there's a box you check that it won't go beyond until you answer the question correctly. I like that feature. That's a nice feature. I think we should incorporate that in schools, too, with kids. We want them to learn. We don't want to make them go leave in there bad, feeling bad. We want them to leave there feeling good about what they learned. So maybe that's a good teaching technique. I don't know, but I like it. Any questions? If there's any questions, we're going to ask for questions, then we're going to go quiet so Gordon can disconnect the recordings. Any questions or insights?
NO70, Topman.
Yes, George, jump right in there, please.
Well, thank you, Mike, Gordon, everyone on the net. I decided to take advantage of your offer to make an insight or observe an insight. When I was taking that QRZ.com test today, I noticed something very funny for me happened. When the answers were rearranged, meaning that the A, B, or C, or D selection, when the right answer was moved, even though I knew what the right answer was, because it had moved, the answer looked different. It had the same words, it had the same thought, it was the answer, it was the right answer, but somehow because the answer had moved within the question, then it looked like an entirely different answer, even though I knew what the correct answer was. Therefore, the question, along with its answer selections, really becomes a different question entirely, although the answer stays the same. It was very interesting effect. Of course, I'm a very visual person, so maybe it hit me harder, but I found the fact that the correct answer appeared to change even though the text of the answer did not change as the answers rearranged to be a very interesting experience when doing the exam review. That's my thought regarding it. KD0CDQ, NO70. Over.
George, what a good observation. What a good observation. Just because the numeric selection changed, it looked different to you. That's because our brain is looking for. It's looking for the A, the B, the C. The brain is looking for that also. Yes, and that was missing. And your brain knew that. It saw the right answer, but something was wrong. Very interesting. And electronics, I believe electronics, because they're made by men, by people, they also have the same, they get tripped easily. I think electronics can get tripped easily by very minor changes. Very good observation. Okay, I'm going to go quiet, and I'm going to ask for everyone to go quiet so Gordon can turn off the recordings. Let's give Gordon that opportunity. He'll come back and tell us. Letting it drop.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Everybody stand by, please. KY6V.
This has been the South Cars Outreach Program. Join us again next time for another in our series of training sessions for amateur radio operators. Goodbye for now.